You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You're listening to Stage Door Podcast, the podcast celebrating theatre and creativity, from onstage mishaps to career-defining moments.
Hosted by thespians myself, Tori, and co-host Eliza, fortnightly we will bring you industry professional guests, deep dives, and more. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Stage Door Podcast. Before we get started with today's deep dive, I would like to acknowledge that I am on Gadigal land, the traditional custodians of the land on which we work, live, and record. And we recognise sovereignty was never ceded. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
And I would like to acknowledge that I'm coming to you fresh from Kaurna country here in Adelaide, and it's lovely to be back on the record.
So you're lucky enough today to be joining us for another one of our incredible deep dives, co-hosted by our very own Gareth Isaac.
Hello, Tori. Lovely to see you slash hear you.
Oh, lovely to see and hear you too.
Greetings from sunny Adelaide.
Absolutely, where you're currently slaying the stage once again in Poppins. Well, once again, continuing. In Poppins, I feel like we obviously need to acknowledge the lack of Eliza. Eliza is still, as I said in last episode, currently killing it in rehearsals for Crybaby at the Queensland Griffith University Conservatorium. Probably didn't say that correctly at all, but you know where she is.
She's up north doing the thing.
Yeah, she's up north doing the thing. So she will not be joining us this week, but she will be back for the next episode. Obviously, we did take a cheeky little two-week hiatus while we got back on our feet because we have been absolutely running around like chickens with our heads cut off. But anyway, enough of that. Let's jump into the episode.
And it is an absolute doozy, guys. This time around, we are bringing something a little different, a little unusual, a little spicy, one might say. Usually, with a deep dive, we'd be tackling a single musical that the audience has voted on, or a show that's currently doing its rounds through the cultural zeitgeist. But we've decided today to tackle a much larger topic that, at least in my opinion, doesn't get discussed as much as it should. The history and implications of the Broadway musical revival.
If the recent 2023 Tony Awards have shown us anything, with awards for and performances by the casts of Camelot, Parade, Sweeney Todd's Into the Woods, and Funny Girl, musical theatre revivals are a big hit with the audiences at the moment. Not to mention the great number of revivals seen in our local theatres with Mary Poppins, Mamma Mia, and Beauty and the Beast currently playing, and shows like Grease, Chicago, and Wicked set to open their doors through 2023 and 2024.
The history of revivals on Broadway is difficult to track given the opening of theatres there stretches back to the Revolutionary War, and shows were mounted and remounted as the producers saw fit. Every second theatre was putting on some variation of the same operas or Shakespearean plays, but records and sources have shown that play revivals far outstretch musical revivals, with Shakespeare's Hamlet being revived a whopping 65 times on the Broadway stage, compared to the Gershwin Brothers musical Porgy and Bess only being revived 7 times.
Can we talk about that, though? Porgy and Bess. Great show. Not a show that I would have imagined to have been revived so many times.
Yeah, I didn't expect that either. And the research that I dug up showed the reasons that it kept being revived was because no one was ever happy with it. Like, they were thrilled to keep putting it on and trying to find a way to make it meet their own expectations, which, great from an artistic standpoint. You can keep bringing the same actors back and trying it again and again and again. But also, like, at some point, put it to bed. I will say, Porgy and Bess also holds the record for most wins for the Tony Award for Best Revival of a Musical. It's got two.
Oh.
Well, here's the thing. It won for Best Revival in 1977, but until 1994, Best Revival was a combined category of plays and musicals. So it holds a record with two wins for Anything Goes, Company, The King and I, and La Cage aux Folles. Mm. Yeah, so a bunch of prestigious shows.
Interesting. Revivals always fascinate me. I'm always excited to see what they're going to do with a revival. If it's something that I have not had an opportunity to see live, I'll always be excited for a revival. But I want to know that they're going to do something fresh with it. I feel like, in my opinion, there's no point bringing back a show that's the exact same show just over and over and over again. There's a few different demographics that go and see theatre. There's like theatre kids who are in it because they love theatre. There's like the general population who, you know, it's a night out. It's a night out on the town, you know. But there are many different demographics. But when you think of like theatre kids, like there are only certain shows that I will see multiple times. Like, for example, Come From Away. If that comes back again, I will see it again because it is a wonderful show and I get something new from it every time. However, there are other shows that, you know, come around that I'm still going to be excited to see. But it's like, if you've not done something different to it, what's to draw me in to see this show that I'm just seeing again, just possibly with different actors?
Yeah, I completely agree. Like, from my perspective, as someone who's, you know, in a revival at the moment, if a show is coming back around that has not found a new message or something new to say, something new to show to the audience, then it's, in my opinion, kind of a missed opportunity. Like, we do see a lot of cookie-cutter productions on the amateur and community theatre scene. I'm happy for those relics to just reproduce what they have seen and what they love and do the things that they would like to do. But when you're pouring that amount of money and that amount of time into producing an entirely new piece of theatre, like, or not producing a new piece of theatre, I should say, like, what are you trying to do? There is something to be said for nostalgia and bringing it back. And the cynic in me is like, it's a cash grab at that point. Because let's look at the revivals that have come by in previous years on Broadway. Let's look, for example, at Camelot, most recently. That has been a reimagining of a classic Lerner and Lowe show that I don't think apparently hasn't done well at all, because they have tried to say something new, which is great. Like, Sorkin's work on the West Wing was phenomenal. I love him as a writer. But you took the magic out of it, literally. Like, it's the Arthurian legend. There's supposed to be magic. What are you doing?
Yes, unfortunately, it has not done well. It is, in fact, closing early, which is sad. R.I.P. Camelot. But see, something like that for Camelot, for example, for me, I've never had an opportunity to see that live. So I would absolutely be so keen to see that and have the opportunity to see it, even if it has been reimagined, to get to see and hear the music and the book live for myself with my own eyes is something great. That's where one of the reasons that I do love revivals, because, you know, the opportunity to see shows that I've not had an opportunity to see because they haven't been around in such a long time. And I think there's something to be said for revivals that do take a risk and make changes. It's either going to work or it's not going to work, but you've taken the risk to make the change, which I think is one of the most important things with a revival, is to keep, you know, the original essence, but to go, okay, how can we make this applicable to now? How can we make this connect to a modern audience?
Hmm. And on the flip side of that, you do have the shows that remain timeless. Like, I'm going counterpoint to everything I've just said about saying something new with a revival and finding a new way to connect to an audience. Look at something like Parade. Like, the most recent revival from the Encores stage into Broadway now, I hate the fact that that show's message is still so relevant. Not a lot needed to be changed in that. Slap a new coat of paint on the set and put Ben Platt in the lead role, and it's still so painfully obvious how much that show needs to be presented and the message needs to be said again and again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's terrifying in an aspect where I want to see new artwork, but then the old stuff is still there and still good and still needs saying. That's terrifying to me.
Absolutely. And you take into account as well shows like Cabaret that is currently happening on the West End. It is not, you know, they have made changes, as I feel like is capable with a show like Cabaret, where you can bring it into the modern day without, but it still, it holds its meaning and it continues on throughout. And it is, it's horrifying. It's really awful when you're sitting in the theater going, oh, wow, this has such impact. This shouldn't still have this impact in 2023.
We shouldn't still be able to relate to a musical about Nazis in 2023.
We should not be going, wow, that reminds me of X, Y, and Z that happened a few weeks ago or last year. But it's also so amazing to know that people are seeing it and realizing.
I agree. Like, there's something to be said about a show that is still bringing people in and still being able to resonate mm-hmm. and be heard by crowds. But on Cabaret, West End, this actually brings to light another point that I wanted to bring up with the whole concept of a revival is the star pull. Like, a revival will come along. I know where you're going with this. A revival will come along and put a star in one of the roles in order to do bums on seats. I think, okay, sometimes you got to do what you got to do. Hell, it gave us Millsy and he's going gangbusters now. But at the moment, Cabaret, the reimagining, has Maud Apatow in the role of Sally Bowles, who, if you don't know, Maud Apatow is the daughter of famed actor-director Judd Apatow. And apparently, not great. Not the best part of the production. So critics and audiences are questioning the need for her to be there in the first place. Conversely, you have a bunch of star casts happening right now on Broadway. Like, every revival that is currently playing on Broadway has these lead players who are either Broadway heavyweights or TV heavyweights or film heavyweights who are just proving themselves time and time again. Our Lord and Savior Josh Groban, for instance. Our boy Gaten Mazzarato coming back to his Broadway roots from when he was Gavroche.
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah.
As a surprise success in Merrily. Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, well, even prior to Merrily, like, his debut was a Broadway revival of How to Succeed in Business Without Really Trying. And everyone was super skeptical about it. Then the Tony's performance happened and he blew the fucking roof off.
Yeah, I think I love it when a big star casting can surprise me. Even within the world of music theater performers coming back, you know, after they've really got the name for themselves, I'm always still a little bit like, okay, like, let's see what you can do with this. And you know, when they do well, it's really lovely to know, okay, great, like, they're not just, it wasn't just that one thing that they were able to do. But you know, it doesn't always, as you said, work. And I have a controversial opinion with Beanie Feldstein as Fanny Bryce in Funny Girl. Now, I will say, I do not believe that she has the most wonderful voice for the role. I do think you need to have a powerful voice for that role. But I really enjoyed what she did with that role, and I enjoyed seeing some diversity on the stage, specifically in relation to myself, body diversity, to be able to go, look at that, the ingenue, the funny, quirky lead role, the lead role that every femme actor has always, even if they know it's not their voice type, has always been, I want to be Fanny Bryce one day, you know? And to be able to actually see it and go, maybe I could. If Beanie can do it, maybe I could. She made choices that were so, so wonderful. And I know that she didn't have the best voice for it, which I do think is very important.
Yes, I completely agree. Beanie's voice was not as powerful as you would expect for a Fanny. But I think the recasting with Lea Michele, okay, I get the joke. I get the glee gag. We don't need to actually do that, given that she's been proven to not be a great person to work with, as evidenced by one of her Glee co-stars, Jane Lynch, immediately leaving the production when Leah was cast. Like, I can read between the lines on this one. Yes, you can be very talented. Yes, you can be very good for a role, but you can also just be not a good person and a clear, like, star plant to get the audience numbers up. When, quite frankly, if I can be a completely left-of-center moron for a second, you had Julie Benko as Fanny cover the whole time. The people's Fanny.
Oh, my God.
She was right there. You could have just bumped her up. The show, I don't think, was doing that badly that you couldn't just have her helm the role.
No, not at all. I think that they made a... Look, Lea Michele has a fantastic voice and she kills it. Don't Run in My Parade at the Tonys. Stunning. Yep. Every song I've heard her sing for the role, fantastic. But it feels like...
A gimmick?
What am I trying to think of? It feels like a gimmick. It doesn't feel like a choice that was made with thought of going, this is the story that we're telling and this is the person that's going to tell that story best. It was, well, everybody thought it was going to be Lea Michele, so we'll just make it Lea Michele. And I'm like, Julie Benko is right there and is amazing. The amount of clips and things that I have seen of Julie Benko, she is hilarious and she is this role to a T.
I agree.
Why not just, like...
Yeah, and it again brings up the point, why was Funny Girl revived in the first place? Because by all accounts, it's kind of just the same show over again. Like, they're trying to recapture lightning in a bottle, I think.
Yeah, and look, don't get me wrong, it's a classic. And it's one of the ones where, you know... So when it comes to like somewhere like Broadway and you've got such a variety of shows happening at any one time of like new shows, old shows, it's nice to, you know, have something that's kind of feels like classic Broadway theater, you know, because I feel like there can be a lack of that sometimes with a lot of the newer shows or a lot of jukebox musicals happening. So I can kind of see it from that point of view. I don't necessarily see it as, for example, Parade, where you go, there is a reason why this is being put on and it needs to be being put on.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree.
Funny Girl feels much more kind of, you know, a throwback and going, hey, this is the golden age of music theatre and I'm not against that. And it's, you know, it's a fun show. It's a fun show with a good heart.
Well, I do agree. Like, we have to pay homage to the golden age of Broadway. It's what made The Great White Way the way it is. Like, these classic shows, and some of them don't want to get lost to time. But again, like, the worry that nothing new can be said or certain shows just can't be done anymore because of, like, certain elements in the script that need to be rewritten. Like, for example, when I mentioned Camelot, they took all the magic out. One of the biggest revivals of shows was South Pacific for a long time. And there's a lot of elements in that show that, frankly, aren't great anymore. And that was early 2000s. So, you know, it does raise the question. Classical shows, revivals, what can be said that is new? How do we adapt it for the modern day? So, all this discussion is making me really come to grips with the fact that any revival is an absolute risk.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Because there is, you know, there is the thing, like we've been saying this whole time. Do you take a risk and try something new? Do you keep the original message? Do you try and find a meld? Because we want to see you do new, interesting things with these shows. But there is always the risk of if you try something new and it doesn't quite land,
you start getting nostalgic for what the show was, like this memory of the show that happened the first time around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it makes me interested to see with Australia, and we were talking about this before we started recording, Australia does a lot of revivals. They don't often call them revivals, but they do a lot of revivals. And so I'm always curious to see what has changed, because I feel like I would say, 80% of the shows that we get in Oz are revivals or new productions of, you know, Golden Age musicals, for example. Wicked is coming, and I'm very curious to see what, if anything, is going to be different. I know when I saw Poppins that whilst I don't know if there was necessarily a lot different in terms of the technical aspects of the show or the writing of the show, but there was this whole new magic imbued in the show. I remember seeing it back when it was here last, and I couldn't tell you when that was.
I mean, I can tell you, and it was 2011.
There you go.
I was sitting right here. You could have just said, when was it last here, Gareth? Utilize the resources you have. I'm sorry.
But seeing it this time, I remember not particularly enjoying it last time, but this time it feels like there was just such magic. It's possibly one of the best shows I've seen in Australia in a while. There was this new magic imbued in it, and I feel like it was possibly to do with the way that actors and performers are, you know, kind of slowly being treated as storytellers and individual storytellers, not just you are a chorus of people, you must do the same, you must act the same, because there was such magic constantly in that show.
Yeah, and for a long time that is how a lot of shows that have come to Australia have been treated. Like, there have been productions of Chicago where it's like, cool, we did this last time, it worked, let's do it exactly the same again, you're gonna act like this last person who did the role. One thing that surprised me was Phantom of the Opera, when we got in 1 year, we had two different productions of that show. And one was a complete ground-up reimagining because it was performed on Sydney Harbour, which was great, but the rain was monstrous for both us and the performers. And the second was the new touring production that had hit the UK for a while, that we got that finally over here. We got to see exactly what had changed, the motivations, which alterations in the score, the script, the book, etc., etc. And that was good. I was happy that we got to see all of this new take on the material. If we had just got the Hal Prince production, as much as I, you know, worship the ground that he once walked on, rest in power, you beautiful golden god, I think I would have been disappointed because, like, we had that many, many times. New York had that many, many times. The West End has had that many, many times. It's a tough one. It's a very tough one to approach.
I think unless it's a show that hasn't been done in a very long time, you need to make it interesting and different, because you need to, I think, not tailor it to the audience that would have already seen it, but, you know, take into consideration that a good chunk of your audience are going to be theatre lovers. And if we just come and see the same thing we've seen again, we'll be like, yeah, it was great. But, like, there wasn't necessarily a lot of point in me going, other than we're trying to support the arts in Australia.
I have just spent $70 to $100 to see something I could have seen 10 years ago. And now the drinks are more expensive.
Yes. Oh, everything. And I understand why. Doesn't mean it's not allowed to frustrate me. I understand why. Theatre is much more expensive in the year 2023.
The year of our Lord 2023 is also how much it costs a theatre ticket, $2,023. We are at that point, that midway point of our record, Tori, where I've been allowed to cook up a game. I don't know why you keep letting me do this.
It's always interesting.
It is, but here's the thing. Last time, I did a one-person trivia contest with Eliza, and this time, I'm going to have to do a one-person trivia contest with you. Like, you know, the opposite ends have to meet, and that is what I've done. I have cooked up a Broadway revival multiple-choice trivia game. Everything you get wrong is a point to me.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, we have to spice it up somehow. I need to feel special.
Okay, you are
all
special.
Right, thank you. Okay, question number one. Remember, these are multiple choice. Which musical was the first to be revived on Broadway? Was it Carousel, Showboat, or Oklahoma?
Oh, I've been asked this question before, but it was a long time ago. Carousel, Oklahoma, or Showboat? I want it. Oh, this is hard.
Yeah, it's a toughie, right?
I want to say Carousel.
You would be incorrect. It was indeed Showboat. Showboat first premiered in 1927 and was revived a stark 5 years later in 1932.
Oh, they really let that one
Yeah, it's
age.
A real tight turnaround on that one. But unfortunately, that's just the nature. Okay, we are now moving ahead through time. Who of these actors did not star in the 1992 Broadway revival of Guys and Dolls? Was it J.K. Simmons, Nathan Lane, or Patrick Page?
Oh, I feel like Patrick Page would have. That feels like the right vibe.
I mean, up to you. We're trying to figure out who wouldn't, though.
Yeah, I'm gonna say J.K. Simmons.
Incorrect. J.K. Simmons, a.k.a. J. Jonah Jameson from the Spider-Man franchise, Cave Johnson from Portal 2, and Tenzin from Korra, the Legend of Aang, or whatever the sequel series was called, did appear in the 1992 Guys and Dolls revival. Patrick Page did not. And Nathan Lane played Nathan Detroit. That's where he got his stage name. There is your fun fact for this one. Which of these revivals won the most Tony Awards? Was it Chicago, okay, South Pacific, or Parade?
Parade.
You're just coming right out of the gate with an answer?
Oh, I think so.
Well, you're wrong again.
God dang it! Everything's
wrong! Yeah, you are really whiffing on this one. Like, I'm throwing you the balls and you're just looking at the sky.
My brain just went to they won.
They only won the most recent production, only won 2 Tony Awards. Chicago won 6, but then South Pacific pipped it by winning 7 for their early 2000s revival.
Oh, you know what? I confused myself because in the speech for Parade, when they won Best Revival, they said because they won when they originally did it, but my brain was like, oh, they said that they had already won.
You really confused yourself.
There you go.
All right, and our final question, which is talking about my boys Gilbert and Sullivan, my good sons of the operetta world. And because all their stuff is public domain, people can do whatever the hell they want with it. So they've been revived a lot on Broadway. So my question to you, Tori, which Gilbert and Sullivan operetta has been revived the most? Is it HMS Pinafore, The Pirates of Penzance, or The Mikado? Like, that's the big three.
Ooh. I want to say... Oh, it's hard. Cause I want to say HMS Pinafore because I know that the Hayes did it. But that doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Like, we can't just base our entire worldview on what the Hayes did.
But we can! And we will! Mikado. No.
You got 5 seconds, Tori. Come on.
Mikado.
Correct.
Oh. That was a guess.
Yes, the Mikado has been revived the most on Broadway with 32 revivals, followed by HMS Pinafore with 28, and my favourite, The Pirates of Penzance, only being revived 25 times. So it just goes to show, if you write a very racist operetta by modern standards, people will keep doing it.
Oh, Lord, I was going to say, I feel like I don't see Pirates of Penzance happening very often, and there's a reason
no,
for it.
No, Pirates of Penzance isn't the racist one. The Mikado is. It's all about Japanese culture. And it's very, very bad.
Well, moving swiftly along from my terrible, terrible
yes,
loss.
Yes, it's all right. Look, you got 1 out of 4, which is not great, but it's good for me because it makes me feel good.
I'm glad it makes you feel good, Gary.
Thank you.
That's what matters.
And I tell you what else makes me feel good, talking about the state of Australian theatre. So I would love to hear a viewpoint of yours. Right now, I am in a revival of a musical. I am happy to point that out. Like, a lot of my friends are currently employed in revivals of musicals in Australia. And our other two big shows at the moment are both jukeboxes. We're looking at Moulin Rouge, we're looking at Anne Juliet. So this raises, like, for my observation, there is a sense of nostalgia about the familiar and the revival in general. And I think this is... Again, I'd love to hear your viewpoint on this. I'm just up on my soapbox spouting nonsense. I think the revivals in Australia at the moment are a sign that people want a bit of comfort after the last few years. You know, the spicy trio of years that has been this pandemic, a lot of theatre goers and indeed a lot of theatre performers lost a lot of hope. During the pandemic, we saw a lot of our newer musicals, Hamilton, Jagged Little Pill, Frozen, Come From Away, all just suddenly closing their doors, and people were losing money, especially the producers, but everyone who was going to go and see these shows never got the chance until the doors reopened. And even then it was a roll of the dice saying, cool, are they going to close up again? So I think at the moment, all these familiar shows coming back, Beauty and the Beast, admittedly with its wonderful design upgrade, Mary Poppins with a few new technical aspects, Mamma Mia's coming back and just being so fucking fun. I think that is what Australia kind of wants at the moment, and I'd love to hear your take.
A portion of Australia wants that. Not all of us want that. I have nothing against the revivals. I know that also I'm very aware that these companies are trying to recoup their losses from COVID. You know, there's always that double-edged sword of we as performers understand both sides of this, and both sides, it hurts us either way. They're trying to recoup, and the idea of taking a risk on a new show right now when they're still trying to recoup is probably very scary. However, I think all of these shows have been done wonderfully, and the performers in them are fantastic. And being able to work in theatre in the year 2023 after almost 2 years of not being able to do anything because of COVID is so wonderful. I want to see something new. If I keep seeing the same things over and over and over again, I'm going to go insane. I want to see new stories. I've been saying this in general, I think shows like Anne Juliet and Moulin Rouge are wonderful. They are such a spectacle and they draw new people in, which is an entirely other topic of how jukebox musicals draw new audiences in for theatre and create new theatre lovers, because it's an easy access route to go, oh, I know this music, therefore I'll go to this and it won't be as overwhelming. But I want to see new stories. Like, you look at what, like, absolutely took out the Tonys this year, Kimberly Akimbo, a new story, a new musical that is not a bio musical, it is not a jukebox musical. I guess it is a bio musical, but it's not a bio musical of Britney Spears or Michael Jackson or Tina Turner, which is not to say that those shows aren't fantastic, because they're really good. I crave new original theatre. I had the opportunity to see The Lucky Country by Vidya Macon only a few weeks ago, and that, I was in tears. It was a 60-minute show and I was in tears. And not only the calibre of the show and the content of the show, but just getting to see new theatre, a new story that I haven't had the opportunity to hear or see before. That's what I crave.
I completely agree. It'll always annoy me that newer shows take so long to get to Australia because our main producers just like to, you know, have their few shows that they like to bring out of the mothballs every so often. Like, I've heard rumors that Annie's coming back. Why are we getting Annie?
Oh my God!
We were so... The children. We were so close to having Waitress in 2019. I am sorry. I will be forever mad that that never eventuated. The auditions were happening. They were in their final stages, and then we lost it entirely, and then COVID happened, so all the money dried up. I'm sorry. Give us Waitress, please, for the love of God.
Look at what happened with Come From Away. How fantastic that was to get some new tasty theatre in Australia, something that we haven't seen 100 times. People loved it, and there are more shows out there like that. I will admit, I think that they've done something with a 90-minute musical. People's attention spans are not what they used to be. People want short and snappy. There is so much opportunity. Like, again, like we've been saying, if you can do something new and fresh with your revival, or there is something happening at the time where you can link it back to what we're experiencing currently, then absolutely. But if it's just for the sake of money, and again, like I said before, double-edged sword, people getting to work, doing the job that they love, their passion, their career, then I want that. But I also want new theatre, and just the fact that we don't get to, I'm like, if they can, I know on Broadway and in the West End and in New York and in America, they have a lot more theatres.
Like, we've got, I can count on both my hands the amount of actual, like, musical-capable theatres we have in our country at any given point. And that's actually something interesting. From what I've been hearing, a lot of producers are wanting to put on more and more shows, but they're finding it much harder and harder to find the space to do it now, which is why I'm really thankful Foundation Theatres in Sydney has bought out a couple new performance venues in The Star. So it's making kind of like a miniature theatre district in Piemont, which I think is great.
Okay. Which I love. I absolutely love that.
Like, I'm tired of going to the Star, though. Like, it's annoying. But that's on the Sydney transport infrastructure rather than my own personal tastes.
That's why you drive.
Yes. I have a motorbike. Leave me alone.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's this constant thing of I understand the revivals and I understand bringing back shows because they know it's going to sell. It's going to keep actors working. You know, but take some risks.
And I will put all of a massive I'll put a massive footnote on all of this. I am never going to begrudge an actor, particularly in Australia, for taking work when it shows up. Like, if they put a piece of paper in front of you that says you're going to be impersonating Danny DeVito or something for a new musical based on his life, like, go for it. Let's just do that.
That's the thing. It's all that's why I'm saying it's such a double-edged sword, because I want people to be working. I want them to be able to do their job and have the life that they want. And if that means it's through revivals, then so be it. But I just also want something fresh, something new, something. I want representation. I want diversity. And it feels like sometimes with some of these revivals.
Yeah, it's as if all the older shows are the proverbial round hole, and new actors are not just square pegs. They are complete icosahedron-shaped people who could not fit into that hole if you tried. Like, you might be able to hammer a square peg in, but new Australian performers have such a diverse range of talents, body types, faces, shapes. It's beautiful, but it's going to be harder and harder to find their place in the industry when, you know, we're trying to cast them in place of an actor from the 70s.
And that's the thing, bringing it back to what I was saying before, that with Mary Poppins, it felt like seeing individual stories on stage, not just a stick straight ensemble that is all on the exact same wavelength. And I think that is the thing, is casting for somebody's soul and who they are and who they are as a performer. And revivals, that's, you know, if they're not doing something fresh and new with a revival, if they're not taking into account our modern world, it just feels stuck in seeing the same thing over and over again. Like, I'm always curious, especially within Australia, to see what they're going to do. And especially in the past year with the revivals on Broadway.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
There's so much quality
so
out there,
good.
And they're reimagined versions, and I'd love to see that here, and I'm not at the moment, and I'm worried, but then, you know, that's showbiz, baby. Yeah, kind of a bittersweet thing to think about. Let's brighten it up. We're coming to the end of the record, so let's leave it on a positive note. Tori, do you have a favourite revival of a show?
Oh, a favorite revival of a show. Oh my god, tell me yours.
Well, obviously the Australian, like, 90s production of the Pirates of Penzance, John English, Simon Gallagher, phenomenal reimagining, which then went over to the West End. Tim Curry wore the purple pants. Great, brilliant. I am also a real huge sucker for the new Sweeney Todd. Groban and Ashford, doing they thang. And controversially, I love the 2017 Sunday in the Park with George with Jake Gyllenhaal. I think I just have a thing for Ashford, apparently.
Although, she is getting roasted.
I have many, many thoughts as a trained dialect coach, but we're putting it to the side.
Which we don't have time for today. Thank you so much for listening. Oh. It's hard. I have been thoroughly enjoying all the content that has been coming out for Sweeney Todd, this most recent revival. It's the Tale of Sweeney Todd. Oh my god, I listen to that multiple times a day because it just rattles your soul. I don't know if I have a favorite revival. I'm trying to think what I've listened to. I just love a revival that takes a little bit of a risk and a little bit of a chance. I loved all of the revivals from this year's Tonys were phenomenal. I feel like it's the year where I wanted Parade to win, and I did believe Parade would win. But But I was like, you know what? This year, compared to previous years, it feels like there's legitimate competition within that category. Because sometimes it feels like, you know, okay, well, these three have done the exact same thing as they did 20 years ago. This one has taken a chance and has brought it to now and has brought in new listeners as well. So I think it's hard. I don't think I have a favorite, but the Sweeney Todd.
It's up there.
Is up there. But, and then speaking of new musicals that I highly recommend people listening to, I highly recommend New York, New York. I know it's not going to be everyone's cup of tea, but it feels like we have a, and I know it's not entirely new in that it's been in the works for a very long time. If you want that golden age feel now, absolutely listen to it. The overture for that show made me cry.
Well, there we go. We're talking about new theatre, we're talking about revivals, we've done it all. Weirdly, like, New York, New York, technically a revival of Kander and Ebb's, like, lost work.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And it is really nice to have a new show that has the old feel. That is my thoughts and feelings and opinions, and we can gab on for forever.
I know. We're like, when you and I start talking this stuff, it never ends.
No, it doesn't. And then it trails off into something completely different.
Because that is the curse of the neurodiverse. Thank you so much for having me on, Tori.
Thank you for taking the time to come on and chat to us today, Gareth. And chookers for the rest of your season in...
in Adelaide. We are here in Adelaide till late August. We are selling so quickly. Adelaide has been really kind to us. We'll be heading to Perth for the end of the year.
Very, very exciting. Well, chookers for the rest of your season. And you guys, that is it for our episode today. Until next time, stay happy, healthy, and safe, and we will see you then. Bye!
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.